Osiris.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Welcome back to We Move Through Stormy Weather, a podcast by Storm Sound and Osiris Media. My name is Ryan Storm, and I'm back here today for pretty much the quarterly interview with the one and only keyboard wizard himself, Joel Cummins of Humphreys McGee. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're here in Boston at the House of Blues. You know, it is day two of Umbl. We had the first night last night, you know, my first Umbl experience, which was excellent.
Yeah, how did
I loved
it. For you?
I loved it. I had so much fun last night. I love all the shtick, you know, that was going on, hearing you guys take on some covers, you know, that you don't play a lot or, you know, haven't played before. And I really, really loved the Stewart second set with all the ideas and seeing how, you know, you guys adapted to each of the different prompts. But we'll talk about that, of course, in this interview. This is catching up with Joel, you know. After our last chat in January, which if people haven't listened to that, I chatted with Joel and with Ryan about, you know, having Chris back on the road with them after shoulder surgery and various other things. So you guys have played a lot of shows since we chatted in Cleveland. How has this year felt to you guys in the band?
Man, thinking back, it almost feels like a lifetime ago that we interviewed. We were right in the beginning of the touring year for us. We have played a lot of shows, and the last couple have really felt good and relaxed up there. And it's interesting because we've spent so much time of the day working on Umbl things that when we've gotten to playing the show, mm-hmm. we're like not just warmed up. We're like, wow, we've already played a whole show today.
Right. Nice.
So there's a little bit of this more, you know, laissez-faire attitude toward everything, that things are happening, everyone's a little more relaxed, and we're being more patient up there. It just seems like there are a lot of great ideas germinating from everyone. And, you know, there are some times when the magic happens, and it's really hard to do with a six-piece, you mm-hmm. know, to say, like, man, we really all felt locked in for most of the show.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's been nice to have a few like that coming into Umbl. Last night, it's kind of the, you know, the first half of our Super Bowl, so it feels like we've accomplished something. You know, mm-hmm. I think we had some vocal challenges. We had a couple people, I mean, even me last week, who weren't feeling great and had some, you know, like losing our voices a little bit. So Chris and Brennan in particular, I thought, I mean, and Jake too, but those guys were really working hard to manage to keep their voices, and they sounded really good on the vocal stuff. We listened awesome. Back a little bit to it last night after the show, particularly Puff the Magic Dragon.
Oh, that was for excellent. Brennan.
And if you haven't heard it, you can hear it on Nugs. Brennan has his own take on how things actually went down. He thinks the original is a little bit too cheery. Which,
yeah.
You know,
no, you got to put a little edge on it.
Yeah, which doesn't surprise me. We call him Bad News Bayless because we've talked about this. Like, when we're talking to the crowd, he can't deliver good news. He somehow makes good news feel bad. So, like, you know, for instance, we've had a few people that have said they were getting, you know, proposing or yep. stuff like this. So I always have to be the one that says that because I'm good with good
yeah,
news.
Yeah, I was going to say, last night you gave the whole...
Yeah. Now, conversely, I'm not very good with bad news. Unless we need to make
That's a good team.
Unless we need bad news to sound like good news.
Sure.
I can do that. But...
That's good. It's a good... Like, at least both of you are in the band.
Yeah. But you know, Brennan, it'd be bad if Brennan only one would invariably... He would say something. He's like, congratulations. You know, are you sure about it? you know, or like, did you know 50% of people get divorced?
Right. Like, on the mic as... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He just can't hold back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
Puff, you know, the Magic Dragon.
It was a special moment. Ryan and I gathered around. You can again see the video as well
on Nux, yeah,
on Nux
with your subscription. I wanted to talk about, though. You know, you are not always, you know, posting online about shows while on tour, as other bands tend to be. And, you know, we've had some discourse about that the last few days, but. You did take to the Twitterverse on Thursday morning to call attention to Wednesday night's show in Burlington, which boasted 2 5-song sets, which was pretty cool. And that's rare for you guys that you have that much long jamming in one show. But what, you know, it takes a lot for you to fluff your own music. Like, how did that feel, and what you know went into that decision to post about it?
Well, my best friend Mark Brownstein is, you know, he's very liberal with his amount of positive tweets that he shares this day, which we're very happy for the bubble of positivity that is around him. But you know, that kind of broke down some walls for me to feel better posting positively about myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although I have said, you know, it's kind of like a religious thing, and you know, Brownie likes to proselytize and try to convert people, you know, whereas we kind of just let them come to us more naturally. So, you know, it's a conscious choice. But in this one, you know, I just couldn't help but break my own rules. Because it was truly a really fun show, and everyone was very relaxed, and, you know, being on the small stage of Higher Ground, I think, helped as well, just as far as our ability to communicate directly with each other, and, you know, could really see what was happening. Mm-hmm. So, but the whole vibe, really, you know, you got the feeling the Burlington crowd was kind of egging us on, too. They were getting more and more revved up as we were, you know, I mean, the first thing that happened, we played Mantis, and we ended up cutting the second song of the night,
yeah.
You know, which was Silent Type. Did we play it later? I think we did.
I don't have.
I think
set
we played it in the
off
encore.
Top of my head. Okay.
I think we played it later, but yeah, that the attachments, and then we played in the kitchen kind of late in set two, and even that one had some really interesting improvisational ideas, and you know, people were coming up with different riffs. We were doing some key changes, and it's this year's been really fun because I think we've tried to figure out better ways to communicate these movement ideas, you know, and even, you know, the modes, so that we jump into an idea and already have kind of a head start knowing what it is when somebody starts something. I think that's sure. The big challenge. It's like, how quick can you come up with something that further develops whatever's happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether that be something that is reinforcing a pre-existing idea or doing something that plays off of that, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it just feels like everybody's hitting a natural stride while also not being redundant. And that's a big challenge with improvisation. You know, obviously you can variate tempos and keys, but as far as where things go, we also don't want to do a show where it's like there were six or seven jams and five of them felt very similar. Mm-hmm. You know, we're intentionally trying to do something
different
reacting to whatever we did before.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about last night, you know, the first show of Humble. It's the 10th Humble, you know, especially after the postponement. Like, I think a lot of people were really excited about last night, obviously, especially you guys, but the crowd felt really excited to be there last night. Going into it, you know, you guys lead off the weekend with the band's choice set, you know, the one of the six sets that you guys, like, it's a regular Humphrey set for all intents and purposes. And I'm curious how you guys approach that. And, you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but reading someone posted on Twitter, like a retrospective of all the previous Humbles and like all the sets, and it hasn't always been the first set of the weekend, right? So I'm curious what goes into the decision to lead off the weekend with that set and how you guys approach the structure for it.
So until the 2021 Humble, it had been four quarters in one show.
Yes.
And only one night.
Yeah.
Right? And then after, you know, kind of thinking about how we could do this a little better moving forward and
not burn yourselves out completely.
Yeah. It's intense for everyone. It's a lot for the fans too. Like that's the other thing. We decided to do six quarters over two nights, right? So two of the three in the past 2 years have been the like kind of the fan voted ones. And then we've had two band's choice sets.
Ah.
So they've usually been, I think, set three of each show, right? So this year we switched it up and we made the band's choice set one for a couple reasons. It was kind of all the other things made the most sense to lay them out as they did. And this was the one that was left. You know, we didn't really want to open with an S, what is it going to be tonight? Oh yeah, an S2 last night. And we didn't want to do the covers first.
Right.
So, and then we also, you know, we previously decided we'd like to do the, you know, the play improvisation of films on the second day to make sure that we got things dialed in on that front. We wanted to do Choose Your Own Adventure. It has to be a different day than the S2. And the S2, because it's improvisation, needs to be a different day than the improving to films.
Right. It's like Sudoku.
Yeah, totally. It is like Sudoku. So that just kind of naturally fell into that slot. And we also talked about it that, you know, it really helped us get set up for being more creative by playing songs we knew that we were confident with that had good opportunities for improvisation, which, you know, we know that these fans, that's one of the things that they want to hear.
Sure.
You know? So it was kind of choosing songs that, I mean, it's just what it is. The songs that we wanted to play that were like, we love these, they're fun. Opening with Staircase, that was we kind of unintentionally ended up opening with that. And it's the one song that we actually have video content for already established.
I was gonna say that it was great, and I immediately, you know, my FOMO from not being in Vegas last weekend for the Sphere shows was immediately lessened. It's like, this
is right
here in Boston. You know, I'm seeing the visuals behind the band. It's basically the same thing.
If you ate enough drugs, it was just like the Sphere. Yeah. So, you know, we started with that. And then the other thing that, you know, my keyboard's facing lots of directions. I got to see what Ben Factor was doing with the video wall. We don't usually have a video wall out with us. It's, you know, it's part of our stage design maybe once or twice a year. And he is able to create this effect with a camera that he has out in front of house, and then like it makes it look like kind of a tunnel.
Yeah.
And so when you have that going on with the existing light show surrounding it, it becomes this wild like kaleidoscope of colors that, you know, I don't know. It's this really, really cool effect. And he was using it a bunch last night. And then also there's our song Triple Wide that typically has, you know, the gobos are spinning and creates this sort of like enveloping effect. And so he did it as well with the image on the LED wall. So it was this whole thing spinning, right?
Yeah. No, it looked really cool.
Yeah, and it's fun to have that back there, and definitely for me, I think it adds something that is a little more like it gives it more of an artistic vibe that I'm, you know, thinking more in that realm as opposed to, you know, doing something that's a little more canned. I don't know. You know, it's an inspiring thing for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So set two last night was Stewart, the, you know, fan voted prompts that you guys then have to jam off of all improv set. How does last night stack up to previous ones? And is there any moment from last night's set that really sticks out to you?
Oh, I thought there were a lot of great parts for, you know, not to sound too much like Brownie in my bubble of positivity, but there were a lot of great parts we got to. And, you know, sometimes it takes a couple minutes to develop. And that's something that we've learned over the years is, like, don't feel like you have to move on to a new idea too quickly.
Sure.
Now, if something is, like, worn out, it's welcome, move on.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed Jake conducting last night.
Yeah, that was really cool.
That was really fun, and you know, he obviously got into it as well, which also, you know, makes it that more exciting. But his brain works like that, and as somebody who, you know, Jake being the multi-instrumentalist, guitarist, drummer, bass player, keyboardist, sax player, singer, you know, he can do it all. So he has a very unique perspective on what can be created, and I think that came out. That was special. You know, the aforementioned Puff the Magic Dragon, of course, a highlight. One thing that happened that I haven't listened back to it yet, but hopefully it comes off as avant-garde. Stasek, when we did the keyboard jam, mentioned E flat, and all I heard was E. I started a Moog sequence in E.
Yeah.
And it was going against E flat for long enough that maybe it did sound intentional.
Sure. It's jazz. Yeah. It's not about, you know, it's not about the note you're playing. It's about the intention. Victor, you know, the Victor Wooten.
So maybe that'll be the next Twitter survey.
There we go. All right. Yeah. Is that avant-garde, or is it a wrong note?
Or is it awful? Oh, God. Yeah, I walked off stage, and everybody was like, Joel, what the fuck, man?
That's awesome.
I still didn't realize what happened until they told me right then. And Brennan eventually was like, E flat. And I'm like, oh, everybody changed keys? And so, like, the end of it I did do in E flat.
Yeah.
When I go back to the arpeggiator the second time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's,
you know,
fine.
So I, yeah, it sounds intentional. Let's go with that.
There we go. I was disappointed at lack of clav in the, you know, in the full keyboard jam.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, right? Well, you know, here's the thing. The clav works best with drums.
Sure. So, oh, absolutely. That was just, you know, that's me being me. I think my favorite part of that set last night was the Medeski, Martin, and Umphreys.
Oh, yeah.
Bit. That was really cool. And,
I joked with Stasek, I was like, you should just get pissed and just lay out and just sit there with your arms crossed, you know?
Yeah.
Why not Chris Wood? What's wrong with Chris Wood? That was really fun. And, you know, like, Jake and Brennan know how to throw in the Schofield vibe. Too,
sure.
So,
oh, absolutely. Neil was talking about after the show, he was like, that was the exact, like, tone for, like, a go-go. That, you know,
yeah,
that
well, I started out with a little percussion, very go-go-esque, and then I used some B3 tones that I don't usually do with Umphreys that are a little more aggressive. I mean, obviously, with the MMW thing, the organ's oftentimes the lead instrument, you know? And for us, most of the time, it's more of a complimentary, you know, filling some, like, sonic, like, thickness, right?
Sure.
So, it was nice to be able to kind of step out of the box of what I typically do and feel like, oh, now I can try to channel a little Medeski. I grew up absolutely loving that guy and MMW, so that was a particularly fun one for me to do.
Awesome.
And, you know, John himself is just a fantastic and funny human being. So, you know, it's that's one of those where it's like, you know, they say, don't meet your heroes. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to hang out with him, and he told me some stories that had me fucking rolling on the ground laughing.
That's awesome.
That guy is just, yeah.
That's awesome. And then
awesome.
Let's third set last night, covers only, fan voted covers. I mean, Roundabout's one of my favorite songs, like, you know, going back to when I was really little. So I loved hearing that one out the gate. You know, you guys crushed that. But what were your thoughts on the how the fans voted for that one?
Well, one funny thing that I thought kind of looking at it was that it was a lot of like, it was a lot of like 80s and 90s, like butt rock hair metal vibe.
Yeah.
But like the good songs of that era.
Sure.
You know, Cult of Personality is sick. You know, Vernon Reed, man, there's another guy I got to play with that I'm like, oh my God, this guy's, he's amazing. Amazing player and great dude. But, I mean, No More Tears, I got to sing, mm-hmm. which that one we always laugh about. Well, everyone else laughs about it because it's in D flat and it's really high.
Yep.
We do it in D.
Sure.
Because that's easier for the guitar players.
Yep. Makes sense.
So it's probably easier for me, too, as a keyboardist. But as a vocalist, it's not. So I was pretty happy with how that went last night. I had a lot of fun playing Kid Charlemagne.
That was great.
is such a great composition. And, you know, being in a jam band for that where we can take out that kind of C major minor groove like we did last night and take it for a little spin is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Chris and I actually went and saw Steely Dan at the Forum back in about 2014.
Nice.
And we were having so much fun that the people in front of us turned around. Like, we weren't talking during the show.
Mm-hmm.
We were laughing and, like, joking around between songs, and they shushed us for talking between songs.
Wow.
I mean, I thought that was a little extreme. But we were just having a great time.
Yeah,
you know?
Some people have very different ideas of what's acceptable at shows. I got told on Twitter the other day that if I don't like people talking at a show, I should stay home and watch the stream.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I never heard that perspective before, and it was really interesting.
I love, you know, Ryan knows this, but for the listeners at home, created this game called the Complicit Game. And what it is, you know, some of these have been real situations, some of them are just hypotheticals that we've thought of, but it's somebody thinking they're giving a compliment when really it's not, and it can either be an insult or it can just be missing the point.
Sure.
You know, but a good one that I, you know, I like to tell other musicians is, you know, I walk up and be like, oh my God, such a great show. I saw like so many of my good friends. I got to catch up with so many people.
Yeah.
Like, it was just great, man. Like, seriously, I had like 10 amazing conversations
yeah,
tonight. Like,
yeah, and how was the music? Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for creating that space of allowing me to talk to my friends loudly and laugh.
Right. Over the music. Yeah, over the music. Yeah, it's like, that's exactly what you want as an artist. You know, that's what you want to hear, too. You know?
So
that's great.
I stumbled into going to the last Rush show ever. It was my first Rush show.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing at the Forum in L.A., same place as the Steely Dan thing.
Sure.
And all these, so Dasha and I showed up, and we saw like half the audience was sitting, half was standing, and I was like, oh, let's not go to our seats yet. Let's like stand up back here, and,
yep.
You know, we can dance a little bit and move around. And finally, the ushers are like, you guys got to go, you know. So we went down to our seats, and, you know, as luck would have it, everyone in front of us was sitting, and everyone behind us was standing,
except
for the two people right behind us who were sitting.
Well, they're in the minority then.
So, we don't pick on minorities, Ryan. Come on. So anyway, they, of course, like, eventually tap me on the shoulder, and they're like, can you sit down? We can't see. And we'd just gotten off tour. I was tired. And I was like, you know, I think the band would like to see a little more energy from the fans. Like, they're working
yeah,
really,
that's awesome. Yeah.
I'm like, they're working really hard up
yeah.
there. I'm like, they're just a three-piece.
Yeah, they want to see people getting down. You know? Yeah, that's great.
And she was like, okay, fine. Now I'm just going to keep tapping you in the show. And I was like, okay. So I'm like, how can I fix this? And I was like, and I could tell it was, you know, it was these two people together. And I was like, how about this? Do you want to just switch seats?
Yeah.
because the people in front of us are sitting, and she was like trying to figure out a way to be mad about it.
Right. It's like
she was like, fine. So we switched seats.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like two songs later, everybody stood up.
Yeah, of course. Like after all that, yeah, that's great.
Well, I was really proud of myself for, you know, like negotiating that solution in the moment, you know? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't always think of that. And usually I'm not an asshole like that either.
Sure.
You know? But I didn't want to sit down. I'm like, this is Russian. It turned out to be their last show. I'm so glad I didn't sit down.
Right. So yeah, good thing you were there and standing. So you guys are heading into summer tour soon.
We are.
You've got Soulshine happening at the end of May. You know, very, very big weekend for you guys every year. How are you feeling going into the reworked event for this year?
Great. Well, you know, one of the things for us that we really enjoyed last year in the last year of summer camp was we played down on the Moonshine Stage, which is the natural amphitheater that's there. And where we played when the event started for the first couple of years, mm-hmm. you know, and then we moved over, they basically made that stage so that we could have our thing and Mo could have their thing,
yeah.
you know, because it wasn't in theory big enough to do both bands and the production and all this, which I understood, made sense, you know? But being back in the amphitheater for me is really like the essence of what that Memorial Day event is,
yeah.
you know? And so I think it's kind of getting back to that a little bit. A lot of people are like, okay, well, what's different? I know that's like, you know, kind of one of the things is like bringing this back to its roots.
Yep.
So, I mean, summer camp in the past probably had the most artists on any lineup I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, it was a lot last
so,
year.
So, yeah. I can understand why that becomes, you know, and just, you know, the reality of the music business right now, if you guys don't know this, is like, shit's gotten insanely expensive from, you know, everything, transportation, travel, hotels, you know, trucking, busing, all this, right?
Yep.
And it's really, really not easy to put on a successful festival. And to do it well, you know, and to not cut corners. So with that in mind, you know, being a promoter, that's something that's gotten riskier and riskier. And there are more and more festivals every year. So I understand kind of the, you know, the big reason of why we need to do it this way for the moment. And, you know, maybe into the future. But I think it's really preserving what, you know, the best parts of this festival, that the forest there where everybody's camping is still a thing, and the amphitheater stage is like the main stage now where mm-hmm. we're going to be playing, where Mo's going to be playing. One of the things that we did last year that we're doing again this year, which I thought was really fun, was a
collaborative
joint
set.
Yeah, yeah, joint set with Mo, where we have members of Humphreys and members of Mo kind of trading in and out as the set goes.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how you guys do that differently this year. You know, having done it once, will the cowbell be making an appearance? Will there be another
large instrument?
Yeah, we'll find out in a month.
Possibly an oversized harp.
Ooh, okay. You heard it here first. Stasic
will
be playing harp.
What will the oversized instrument be?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of fun for both of us. Obviously, we have so much love and respect for the Mo guys, and you know, they were some of the first people who invited us to open for them and to go on tour with them. So to have had and to continue to have an annual event with them that we get to collaborate on now is really a good time. And it's cool because it kind of takes the pressure off a little bit, where it's like, you know, it's not Humphreys, it's not Mo.
Yeah, it's you guys together, yeah.
You know, there's not the expectation of, oh, it should be this or it should be that,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
So I'm really looking forward to that. We've got our annual trip to Colorado, doing things a little differently this time. We're going to be playing at, actually not Colorado, but the Red Butte Garden in Salt Lake City, which is my probably second favorite outdoor venue to
nice.
Red Rocks. And then the Vail Amphitheater, which may be or the Ford Amphitheater in Vail, which is like the third or fourth.
I'm excited. I'm going there for the first time for J-Rad at the end of May.
Sweet.
Which I can't wait to see that place.
Yeah, it's a cool spot. And then Red Rocks, and we've got Corey Wong and
yeah, that's awesome.
Daniel Donato and Cosmic Country. And Daniel's playing with us in Salt Lake, and I don't think it's been announced yet, but he is there with us in Vail and then at Red Rocks too.
Awesome.
So pretty sweet lineup this year for our Red Rocks show. Mm-hmm. You know, we're coming back out to the East Coast, 4th of July weekend too. Be playing around there. Let me think about what else do we have that's announced. Oh, we got a West Coast tour that we're doing a couple co-bills with Blues Traveler in July.
I don't know if those are announced.
They are announced.
They are?
Yep.
I've seen that. That's cool.
Maybe announced them like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Sweet.
Doing some stuff in California and one show in Bend, Oregon, which is also one of my favorite cities.
Excellent. Yeah. There you go. You're hitting everywhere that you want to go this summer. That's very
exciting.
We
are. A lot of shows. No doubt.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and we're playing some festivals too. We're doing Electric Forest again, which is one of my favorites. I've done a bunch of side shows there recently, and fun for me personally because that's one of my wife's events. So just a really, really sweet festival in northern Michigan, if you don't know. I assume most people know. But yeah, we're doing that. We're doing something called the Big E in Massachusetts here this summer. Apparently it's like a county fair or a state fair sort of thing.
Cool.
Yeah, Lotus is playing with us.
Nice.
So we'll be back in the East Coast for that too.
Awesome. You're hitting it all.
We'll be back. We've got some to be announced shows that I'm also very excited about. That, depending on when this airs, they may be announced. So
this will be out on Monday.
Oh, okay. Ideally. Well, I can say it then. We've got some shows with Eggy playing with us, and a band called Stolen Gin as well, who a friend just mentioned to me on a ski lift. So I thought that was interesting.
That's good to know.
Checked
that
them out. Definitely the right dig band, the sound.
Awesome.
And so we're going to be playing some shows in the Midwest and some shows in the Southeast.
Sweet. Very exciting. Well, thank you, Joel. We'll be back together again, I'm sure, later this summer at some point.
I mean, quarterly, what is it right now? April? So
quarterly or so. So, yeah.
By July, August.
We need to have another interview.
We can't wait longer than that.
It's true. Yeah. The people need it. People demand it.
I just want to say this in closing.
Yes.
Talking to Ryan before the interview, I was like, I got to do this interview next door. And he goes, okay, but Joel, why are you doing a Goose podcast? So, you know, Ryan Storm here is a known entity, Goose podcaster. But, you know, Ryan wanted me to let him
wear many hats.
Yeah, don't worry. He has many podcasts. So, you know, this guy, you should see his resume.
Thank you.
It's pretty impressive.
Thank you. I'm excited for tonight.
Me too.
Night 2 of Humble is going to be great. Thank you again, Joel, for sitting down. Always such a pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of We Move Through Stormy Weather. Have a fantastic day, and see you next time.
Hey, music fans! We wanted to let you know about Music on the Mountain, a show that will feature Anders Osborne, Dogs in a Pile, and Saints and Liars. This show will be directly after the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 18th, at the base of Akemo Mountain in Ludlow, Vermont. The show is presented by The Phoenix, a national nonprofit organization offering support to those in recovery and anyone impacted by substance use to celebrate recovery. If you're running in the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run, you'll be automatically registered for the show. It's a family-friendly event, and all proceeds from ticket sales and other donations benefit the Divided Sky Foundation. Visit Music on the Mountain, that's musiconthemtn.com, for more info and to get tickets. That's musiconthemtn.com. Hope you enjoy.
Hi, this is Henry Kay, host of the number one music history podcast, Rootsland. Come with me on a journey to Kingston, Jamaica, where we explore the world of reggae music and the untold stories of some of the genre's greatest legends. From the ghettos and tenement yards where the music was born, to the island's iconic recording studios. We are so excited to team up with Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. Because as you'll hear, sometimes the story is the best song.